But first, as fear of the new coronavirus continues to spread, Chinese and other Asian Americans have been feeling the impact. The Phoenix Chinese Culture and Cuisine Festival celebrated the Chinese New Year over the weekend. Meng Ansley was one of the organizers, and she said news of the coronavirus did have an effect on this year's festivities.
We did see some impact. We did not have as high attendance as last year, so maybe about 30 to 40% less than last year.
She says food vendors in particular noticed a smaller crowd than usual. They saw fewer children and members of the Chinese communities. Businesses that cater mostly to Chinese customers told her they've seen more of a drop in business than those that cater mostly to non-Chinese folks. That meant the festival actually had to cancel some of its activities because of a lack of participants. The festival was prepared, though. In addition to the traditional dances, crafts, musical and martial arts performances and food, it also had tools to ward off germs in general.
We had sanitizers and wipes and tissue paper on the tables in every booth. This is a big flu season. So generally, everybody's taking precaution, not just because of the virus.
Some students at Arizona State University have felt the social effects of the virus, too. Tevin Nguyen is president of the Asian Pacific American Students Coalition and has been hearing from his peers about recent encounters with racism from other students. He joins us now to tell us more about what's happening on campus. Tevin, good morning.
Morning. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about this. What kinds of stories are you hearing? What kinds of experiences?
Right. So, you know, I think most Asian students have probably experienced, like, jokes and seen things on social media that are just, like, pretty racist or xenophobic jokes. Like, you know, I've heard, like, oh, watch out for Tevin. He might have the coronavirus. Mm-hmm. I've heard students, you know, feeling that they've been getting stares, like, feeling conscious. You know, a lot of Asian American students and Asian international students are feeling self-conscious when they're coughing or sneezing. People have gotten up when they've tried to sit at tables, you know, outside of Starbucks. I've heard a story where a Korean American woman was walking back home from studying at the library, and you know, someone got out of a car and like yelled at her, blaming her for the coronavirus here. So, you know, all sorts of racial and xenophobic harassment.
Do you think it's particular to ASU's campus, or is this spreading further than that at this
point? Oh no, this is like, you know, this epidemic of prejudice has been around like the whole country, and you know, anywhere where coronavirus is, you know, it's even an international issue.
Why do you think this is happening? I mean, there's lots of sort of racial undertones here, but it sounds like it's becoming a little more than that.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of these racial undertones have been, like, pre-existing. There's a history of this tying, you know, justifying xenophobia and racism behind this idea of, like, public health or safety, you know, for a long time. We've seen this with SARS and even as far back as the Chinese Exclusion Act.
What about the reaction from the administration at ASU? Do you feel like there's been enough in terms of collaboration and helping to ease those concerns?
You know, I think they've been doing a lot to address the health fears of coronavirus. But as far as, you know, addressing the racism and xenophobia, honestly, like, you know, we've released a statement asking the university to release a written statement. You know, I know Michael Crow and others in the university, like, will talk to the press about it. But, you know, we think our APASC believes that the students deserve a written statement from Crow himself.
Do you think that this is, it sounds like you think it's sort of revealing some underlying issues. What do you want people to know? How would you like to kind of combat that?
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, firstly, there's no reason to believe there's any association with that this is like an Asian virus, or that the Asians, you know, or people who appear Asian looking will like have the coronavirus. We had no confirmation of the ethnicity of, you know, the person at ASU that had the corona or has the coronavirus. Mm. And I think, you know, people should really question why this association or assumption's automatically made, and why, you know, there's this idea of like Asian Americans and Asian international people all of a sudden being associated as dirty or dangerous.
What do you think, what are you telling students to do? Like, if they feel like they're being targeted or discriminated against, how can they fight this?
Right. So, you know, it's obviously, you know, college is already a hard time for a lot of our students already, and especially for, you know, the most vulnerable populations, such as and our international populations. So it's really scary. You know, we've heard people not wanting to come to class or things like that. Mm. But, you know, we've been trying to show support. People have been you know, doing events and educational pieces on, you know, destigmatizing masks and things like that, or, you know, just, and, you know, we encourage them to come forward if they feel comfortable talking to other people about their experiences and educating, you know, other peoples on, you know, not to have such hate, like, bigoted behaviors, really. And so, you know, we're talking with each other, we're building community and showing that support, and also, you know, trying to get the university to do the same.
Has this affected you personally? Is this something you're feeling yourself?
Right. You know, I've heard jokes like, oh, watch out, you know, for Tevin, he might have the virus and things like that. But, you know, it's mostly been the pains of the community, and, you know, my friends have been feeling it harder, especially those that are, you know, Chinese international students and Chinese Americans. So it's just, you know, this is a suffering that the whole community is really going through.
All right. Tevin Nguyen, the president of the Asian Pacific American Students Coalition at ASU. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And now let's turn to Luis Mendoza, the director of ASU's School of Humanities, Arts, and Culture. He's written about how disease outbreaks can often give voice to racist agendas. I sat down with him in our studios recently and asked him, is this a new phenomenon?
Not at all, unfortunately. I mean, there have been many times in history when entire populations have become stigmatized as disease carriers and a threat to the nation's health. Throughout history, minority and outgroups have especially been blamed for the spread of infectious disease. Mm-hmm. For instance, we can go back to medieval Europe and think about how Jews and gypsies were among those accused of spreading the bubonic plague. Or in 1793, during the yellow fever epidemic in Philadelphia, local officials singled out actors, vaudevillians, and artists for transmitting the disease, which was an ethnic group but a particular occupation. The Irish were charged with bringing cholera in 1832. Italians were stigmatized for bringing polio. Tuberculosis was tied to as it was called the Jewish disease at one point. In the late 19th and early 20th centuries, Asians were portrayed as feeble and infested with hookworm. And more recently, in 2014, we had two instances occur in the United States where, for one, the Ebola virus outbreak in West Africa caused a lot of this to be projected on African immigrants in the United States. Mm-hmm. We had then also what we might call the first Central American unaccompanied minors border crisis. And there was where a lot of children had been left at the border and were waiting to be entered into. But this became a huge public outcry about they carried the measles, the swine flu, Ebola, diphtheria, mumps, rubella, polio, and tetanus. I mean, everything got projected onto them when, in fact, very little of this was factually true. And that's the problem with these kind of outbreak hysterias is that they fly in the face of actual facts.
So while there are examples of this throughout all of history, right, for a long, long time, as you outlined there, how does it present itself today? Because it feels like insidious in a way. Like it's almost, is it more easily justifiable for folks because they're saying, well, I'm just trying to protect myself and my family and our health?
Well, I think what happens is sort of perfect storm where you get several things rolled into one. There's this fear of the unknown. I mean, you have a disease outbreak and you're like, is that going to impact me or my community or my family?
Yeah.
And I think it's easier to scapegoat a people. This is the source of the problem. And if we can somehow contain this threat, then everything will be okay. And you have this toxic combination of ignorance, fear, and sometimes pre-existing bias. You have people who fear the unknown and they don't know what to do, and then they project that on others that they don't know. They say that must be the problem. They must be the carriers. So you have this horrendous situation where others become this blank slate for people's fears to get projected upon.
So when you see, you know, headlines start to pop up about a new virus, a new potential pandemic, health concerns around the world, and it comes from a certain part of the world, does this surprise you at all that you start to see incidents like this, like Chinese American students on ASU's campus, you know, people just avoiding them?
Unfortunately, it doesn't surprise me, because I think we've seen this pattern in the past, and it's not always the case that new generations sort of learn the lessons of the past. So what we have is this sort of very human situation to sort of try and find a solution, to try and find a source of the problem. But it's irrational, and this is people not listening to medical practitioners, to scientists, to doctors, and then those who exploit it and tap into those fears of people by creating larger sort of threat narratives, and they become threat narratives to our health. Mm. And then sometimes they get even larger projections. They're threats to our culture, to our society, to our way of life, to our nation. So I do think it's this very irrational fear that gets oftentimes exploited by others as well.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily the initial reaction by the public. It then gets co-opted, you say.
Absolutely.
You're not a public health expert, but what are the ways in which we can battle sort of the racist ties to this and the implications of that?
Well, I always say, I do a lot of work around immigrant communities, and there's a lot of hostility towards them these days. But I think I always remind people that information trumps ignorance. There's no way to battle ignorance except by becoming informed. And so how can we have, we need good media coverage. We need good stories. We need people to talk about what the real problem is and not lose sight that this is a medical situation, and it's a virus that people who have the knowledge and the skills can combat, and we need to listen to their well-informed opinion about what we should do and not go down the road of dehumanizing others or losing our own humanity in the way we treat others. So follow guidance from those in the know in the medical community and really encourage policymakers to develop responses that are scientifically based for dealing with disease and not try and support or cultivate policies that are a reaction and based on fear.
All right. That is Luis Mendoza, director of the School of Humanities, Arts, and Cultural Studies at ASU. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.